Hi, Sweet Sisters. How are we doing? That was a great song, right? What an awesome promise. He will take care of you. It's pretty great, right? I'm so blessed to be here with you guys. And thank you, Kathy, for inviting me up here. It's an amazing opportunity to share God's mighty word and truths. And for the teachings thus far with Kathy's and Linda's, I was like, after Linda's, man, I was like, I'm done, but we're going to keep going here. So for my teaching today, I'm going to look at the goodness and provision and faithfulness of God to his people. We're going to be looking at examples of different choices that we can have regarding faithfulness, which is ultimately the choice of believing or not believing in these truths. Pretty simple, right? We know God's faithful. We know God's good. We see throughout the scripture how he cares for his people. We know God can and will provide for us, but we must make these choices and we must make these decisions in our life to believe this, right? When we cling to these truths, when we cling to the remembrance of who God is to us, we can flourish despite whatever is going on in our life, whatever circumstances around us, right? Despite whatever persecution we might have, whatever pressure we might be facing. But we have to believe these truths, you know? We have to choose to turn our eyes away from the pressure and onto God. We have to choose to turn our eyes away from the temptations that are going on around us and on to God. But to do this, we have to know our God and we have to be confident in him, right? So we're gonna look at the children of Israel today because this is a really great example of choosing to place your confidence in God or choosing unbelief. and I'd like to thank Hannah too. Your teaching a couple weeks ago, that True Manna, that was really a great platform for this for me. And if you guys haven't listened to it, listen, it was really wonderful. But, you know, as we're going through some of this, I just want you to keep in mind, this is your God too. The power, the provision, the faithfulness, the works that he displays can be just as real in your lives as he showed in these records, you know? So let's turn to Exodus, okay? Exodus 6. I'm going to be reading from the ESV the whole time just to kind of let you guys know. And just for a little background here in Exodus 6, God had commissioned Moses to lead his people, like we just saw, the children of Israel out of bondage. And that was the slavery that they were in under Egypt, right? You know, at this point in time, the children of Israel knew of God and that he was their God, but they didn't really know him personally. They didn't have the written word like we do, right? They didn't really know God yet. And they didn't know his love for them, how he wanted to take care of them in the way that he could, and the great power that he had. So God's instructing Moses on what to tell the children of Israel about who he is and what he would do for them. You know, he already told Moses, I am who I am, kind of like Linda was talking about in chapter 3, but now he's addressing for the children what they'll be doing here, right? In verse 6, in Exodus 6, verse 6, says, say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God. And you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will bring you into the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord. Moses spoke thus to the people of Israel, but they didn't listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. So, you know, God promised to deliver his people out of the slavery of Egypt into the promised land of Canaan. And God's intention isn't just to bring his people out of bondage, but to show his people that the world, and not just to his people, but to the world, who he is, right? He wanted to know them. He wanted them to know the kind of God that he could be, the kind of deliverer that he is. And he was going to demonstrate this to his people so that they would know who he was to them. But it says that the people didn't listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. You know, and at this point in time, it wasn't that they necessarily weren't listening yet because they didn't want to trust God. It was because of a broken spirit and the harsh slavery that they were under at this time. You know, Israel was in a really rough spot right then. They were slaves. Their lives were hard. Their spirits were low. They were discouraged and under hard labor. But they didn't know God yet. Not really to the sense of knowing his provision and his power and his love for them. God says he will deliver them and bring them into the promised land, but they don't know the power and provision of God yet. So God's going to do some really amazing things to show them his love, to show them his power, and to show his faithfulness to them. Turn to Exodus 14. So for the purpose of time, I'm just going to kind of overview a couple key things that happen to build up to where we're going here. But in doing so, just keep in mind the goodness and the faithfulness of God in his care for his people, okay? So first, there are all these plagues against Egypt, right? Which takes place in chapters 7 through 12. Every single one of these plagues was a mighty and powerful act of God, a demonstration of his power and a demonstration of what he could do for his people. And each one is progressively worse for Egypt. Each one demonstrates more and more God's protection over the children of Israel, as these plagues only affected the children of Israel, or of Egypt, excuse me, not Israel. Get it right. Children of Egypt. Doing great. Now, so these plagues culminated in a final plague, which was the death of the firstborn child in Egypt, right? After this, Pharaoh said to Moses and Aaron, take the Israelites, leave. And then God leads his people through the wilderness toward the Red Sea with a pillar of cloud to lead by day and a pillar of fire by night, right? The pillars didn't depart before the people. So God's showing his mighty works again already to them. He's protected them from the plagues. He's taken them out of Egypt, and he's got this pillar of cloud and pillar of fire to guide them on the way. So he's continually taking care of them, right? And now the children of Israel are camped by the sea, but Pharaoh's heart is hardened again, and his mind was changed to bring Israel back to be slaves. So he gathers his chariots, he gathers his army to pursue Israel, and that's where we're going to pick up here in verse 10, okay? Exodus 14:10. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would be better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. And Moses said to the people, fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You have only to be silent. It's pretty great, right? You know, when Pharaoh drew near and Israel saw the Egyptians coming and they were afraid, right? They saw what was happening in front of them and they were fearful, you know? There weren't enough graves in Egypt that you had to go have us die in the wilderness instead. I mean, how easy fear will do these things to us, right? And it's easy to look at this situation from the outside and be like, well, wait, don't you remember what he just did to you guys in Egypt there? Like what those plagues and everything that you just saw? But, you know, remember, they're still learning to understand God and his protection and his provision, right? And, you know, think of this in the context of our lives too. When something happens, when pressure builds up, it's easy to look at a situation and assume the worst. The children of Israel are physically seeing this massive army drawing towards them, ready to capture them back to this harsh slavery that they just left. They weren't armed. They weren't prepared for battle. They were stuck with an Egyptian army closing in on them on one part and then the Red Sea behind them here. It's super, you know, it's easy to see that they're looking around and assuming the worst in the situation here, right? And It's easy for us to get tempted towards that line of thought too, right? When pressure kicks up, we have that choice. It's choose to look at the situation in fear and stay rooted in that, or choose to remember God's goodness and provision and trust in that. And this is what's said to the children of Israel. Fear not, stand firm. See the salvation of the Lord, which he will work in you today. The Lord will fight for you. So Israel is being called once again to not fear any other nation or circumstance here, but to remember what God said he would do for them. You know, and in situations in our life too, when we have pressures closing in on us, this is what we can choose to do, to remember too. God is just as real in this type of protection and in this type of power for us and for our lives as he was for the children of Israel if we choose to look to him. And what happened? Let's jump down to verse 21, still in 14, 21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, his horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord in the pillar of fire and of cloud looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw the Egyptian forces into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, let us flee from before Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. Egyptians saw it. They knew they were screwed here, right? Then, can I say screwed? I'm sorry if that was... then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. As the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all of the host of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and his servant Moses. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians. So the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and his servant Moses. What a great and mighty act this was. After seeing this, you have literally seen a sea part. You have seen yourself be able to physically cross on dry ground with waters and walls next to you here. And then you... when you cross, your enemies are swallowed up in that wall of water back into the sea. How could these children ever doubt the goodness and the provision of God to them? But you know, the same thing can be seen in our lives. I'm sure each and every one of you can recount numerous times where God has saved you, where God has provided for you, where God has done wondrous things for you. So if you took a moment to just recount a few of those, we should all be able to say that God has worked with us enough in our lives and built us up enough to say, I have my full and complete trust in God and total confidence in you, God, so that every situation in life, I'm not gonna have doubt, I'm not gonna have fear. It's gonna be great. Man, I wish that was true, right? But no, sadly, we're humans. You know, we're flesh. We have the spirit to live by now, but we still have flesh to contend with. We still have an adversary. And we still have the opportunity, though, for a situation or a pressure in life to tempt us away from our believing. And that's what happened again to Israel. Turn to Exodus 16. So after the Red Sea, they walk in the wilderness for 3 days without water, and the people grumbled because they're really good at that. And God turned the bitter water into drinking water for them. And then in Exodus 16, verse 1, it says, they set out for Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. The whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. So you have brought us out to the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Oh, these children, I tell you. So they had, again, just recently walked through a sea onto dry ground, right? God had provided them with water, and now they were set out for Elim, and the whole congregation is grumbling. You know, would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in Egypt, where we had meat pots at least. At least we were filled full, you know? I mean, it's funny how quickly you forget the bad things when you're experiencing pressure. It was terrible beforehand. They were slaves. But they're considering, you know, oh, that situation wasn't so bad. They're focused on this lack at hand. But they had seen God rescue and care for them multiple times now. They had just walked through the sea. They had just had bitter water turned to drinking water. So even though they saw these amazing things, they're now fearing the lack of food around them. God has yet to let them down and to prove his unfaithfulness. But God is also so gracious. I mean, even with the grumbling and what he's already shown them, he still shows his provision. In verse 4, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare to bring it in, it will be twice as much as they gathered daily. Okay, so God declares that he will be bringing bread down from heaven daily for them, right? But before the Sabbath day, they're to collect twice as much to gather. So this bread, this is the manna, right, would rain down from heaven every morning, every day, faithfully. The people would gather enough to eat for the day, but if the people tried to save it, it would rot, right? Except for the Sabbath day, where they would gather 2 days' worth so that they could have that rest, right? Every day, God provided food for them. And it would rot at the end of the day, except before the Sabbath, where it would last 2 days. There is absolutely nothing on this earth that has the power or capacity to do that. Raining down food from heaven, this cannot be done in the physical realm. But not only that, think about this. I was thinking of this earlier here. This food has the ability to consistently rot after 24 hours, except one day a week where it rots after 48. There's no food that has a consistent cycle that can change its rotting cycle, like one day a week. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is only God. This is supernatural. This is his power. This is his ability. This is his goodness. This is his faithfulness for provision in their lives, just like he provides for our lives, right? He is demonstrating his ability and consistent care for them and teaching them how to trust him in all aspects of life. God is showing and teaching them that he can and will provide daily in a way that man never could. Man can't rain bread. Israel couldn't provide for themselves in the wilderness. God did both of these in a way that was undeniable to his power and to his care. Let's turn to Numbers 13, please. Okay, so at this point, they're getting close to the promised land, and God instructed Moses to send a chief from each tribe to spy out the land of Canaan, which he promised to give to Israel. So Moses instruct these men to spy out the land and the inhabitants and to bring some fruit back from the land. So these guys go, they spy out the land, and they took a single cluster of grapes, except that cluster needed to be carried on a pole. That's how big that one single cluster was, right? So it's pretty fruitful land in front of them, right? we're going to start in verse 25, Numbers 13:25. At the end of the 40 days, they returned from spying out the land, and they came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told them, "We came to the land which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. However, the people who dwell in this land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of Negeb. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea along the Jordan." Okay, so the men come back, and they report to the children of Israel on this land. And they say, "Hey, good news. It's flowing with milk and honey. The fruit is bountiful. Look. Like, we got one thing of grapes here. But these people are strong, and these cities are fortified and large, and the Amalekites are there, the Hittites are there, the Jebusites are there, the Amorites are there. They all dwell there. So, you know, this land is great, but there's a lot of stuff in the way." So now they have a decision to make, right? God's demonstrated his provision. He's demonstrated his ability to rescue. He's demonstrated his ability to protect and to care for them. But now they're being told that the land he is promising has some challenges to it. Let's keep going. Verse 30. "But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it.' Then the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are.' So they brought back to the people of Israel a bad report of the land they had spied out, saying, 'The land though, through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people that we saw are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come from Nephilim, and we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, so we seemed to them.'" Okay, so Caleb goes in and he's like, "God said this. Let's go occupy it," right? But the men who went with him said, "No, we can't go up against these people. They're stronger than us." You know, these guys are fixating on what's in front of them and not on the promises of God, not remembering his faithfulness. And you know how often and quickly we can exaggerate with fear. In verse 32 and 33, it says, the men said, "The land devours its inhabitants, and we're like grasshoppers to them," you know? And again, have you just ever noticed how you can exaggerate any situation when you're afraid or you're fearful or anxious? It's that snowball effect, right? It's, they went from "these people are strong" to "we're like grasshoppers to them." And this thinking can have effect on others too. Keep going here, chapter 14, verse 1, it says, "Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night, and all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, 'Would that we had died in the land of Egypt.'" Oh, I'm tired of this here. "'Would that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?' And they said to one another, 'Let's choose another leader and go back to Egypt.'" Man, it's crazy, right? So the people rebelled. You know, the people of Israel are choosing to trust these words of men instead of trusting what was promised to them by God. And again, how easy it is to see how foolish these children were, but consider this in relation to our own lives, right? How easy is it for our minds to go totally off when we're not trusting God? Reason just gets thrown out the window, right? And you know, consider some of these complaints though. Let's break these down. "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt." Were they blessed in Egypt? No, they were slaves. You don't have to turn there, but Exodus 1, 13 and 14 says, "So they ruthlessly made the people of Israel work as slaves and made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in all kinds of work in the field. In all their work, they ruthlessly made them work as slaves." That was their life. They were made bitter and with hard service. And like we saw in Exodus 6, the people had a broken spirit and harsh slavery. They weren't cared for there. They didn't have a blessed life. That's what they're choosing to focus on. Focus back to, right? What about, "Or would that we had died in the wilderness"? Were they cared for in the wilderness? Yeah. God had provided for them daily, right? He gave them water to drink. He promised no disease on them. He was daily supplying them with manna. Now, okay, I was thinking about this too. So like at this exact time, they would have had collected manna that morning for their provision. Like they literally had their manna and their supply from God that day in their tent. I don't know what time of day it was. I don't want to like extrapolate too far out on this, but like maybe they had manna at their feet. Maybe it was in their hand and they were just finishing eating and they heard these words and they were like, whoa, we had it way better back in Egypt here. They were literally being sustained by God while they are doubting him. That's where their thoughts are choosing to go instead, right? What foolishness. Here's my sustenance for the day, yet I'm grumbling against you with this report. You know, and another thing to consider, at that time back in Exodus 14, when the Egyptian army was pursuing them, God was still proving himself to Israel. At that time, they saw persecution and peril coming at them physically with their own eyes, and they hadn't seen God's protection or provision to that extent yet, right? But now they had already seen it. They had witnessed the pillar of cloud to block the Egyptian army. They had witnessed the physical parting of the Red Sea. They had physically walked on that dry ground with the wall of water on each side. They had seen God's protection and provision and power mightily at this point and his faithfulness. Now they were getting reports of something that was seen by the spies, and they were complaining and fearing about something that hadn't actually happened yet. How crazy is that, right? They're turning back to these thoughts, these grumbles, before anything has ever actually happened. They haven't actually gone into the promised land. They just know what's been seen there. They haven't actually faced persecution. They just see what's in front of them, and they're assuming the worst, and they're forgetting God. And, you know, that's a big one for us to consider. It can be easy for us to let our thoughts go when it's a future event and we're not locked on to God and to his promises, right? Like, I don't know, if I'm praying about a challenging situation or something, you know, in my brain, I might be playing out 27 of the worst case scenarios and giving those 27 scenarios to God right there and saying, okay, so help me figure out how to take care of this one. And then if that happens, though, we got to figure that one out. And then, okay, what about this here? You know, no, I have to stop and I have to force myself to turn my thoughts back to God, not to that, to God and to his provision and to remembering his faithfulness in my life and not creating the worst case scenarios in my brain. It's somewhat of a similar thing, right? You know, these children of Israel are choosing not to believe in the goodness and the provision of God, even though he had demonstrated his protection, his provision, his goodness time and time again. They chose to be focused on the things that they're seeing in front of him versus remembering the goodness and love of God and clinging to the promises that he has for them. He has only shown himself faithful to this point. They have absolutely no reason to doubt him. And this is what can happen to us too, right? We know God's power and might. We have all seen him care for us in our lives, but we can get swayed by the things in front of us and focus on the fear that directs our thoughts away from the truths and provision and faithfulness of God if we're not choosing to stand firm on him and his word and his truths. Let's keep going. In verse 5, then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the people of Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, the land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. They had it right. They saw the truth, right? Fortunately, let's keep going. Then all the congregation said to stone them with stones. But the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of the meeting to all the people of Israel, And the Lord said to Moses, how long will this people despise me? And how long will they not believe in me in spite of all the signs that I have done for them? You know, Caleb and Joshua saw the truth. They believed these truths from God. They believed he would care for them and lead them into this land as he promised. They tried to reason with the people, and the people almost stoned them. The children of Israel, despite the consistent goodness and faithfulness and provision and power of God, chose to see what was in front of them and those circumstances as greater than anything God could deal with. Why didn't they trust him? They were seeing him as small. Possibly like the other gods that were around him beforehand in Egypt, I don't know. But the despise, the contempt they are showing to God demonstrates this. God knows the heart. This is what was in theirs. How long will this people despise me? They had hardened their hearts, you know, and they were choosing to stand in the circumstances versus trusting God. God can work in so many situations, but he's not going to overstep free will. He wanted to care for them, but if they wouldn't look to him, his hands are going to be tied, right? So despite all he had done thus far, despite his continual provision and the faithfulness and the care, this group would not choose to turn their hearts towards God and accept that he would be faithful to the promises that he had given way back in Exodus 6 of leading them into this land. Go down to verse 21. It says, but truly as I live, and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, none of the men who have seen my glory and my signs that I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have yet put me to the test these 10 times and have not obeyed my voice, shall see the land that I swore to give their fathers. And none of those who despised me shall see it. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit, has followed me fully. I will bring into the land into which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. So God sees the hearts of this nation and the men who brought forth this bad report, and he sees that they're continuing to choose not to trust him besides all that he had done for them. So the children of this next generation would be the ones that were going to be entering the promised land after 40 years of wandering, along with Caleb and Joshua, because they had believed God's words. But you know what's crazy? God still took care of him during the children during this time, right? This is the love of our Father to his people. Even though they were choosing not to believe to cross into the promised land, he continues to uphold his promises to them. And he still desires to take care of them despite the periods of unbelief. So during the 40 years of wandering, he still fed them manna. He still provided water. Clothing did not wear out. Feet did not swell. There were many encounters of resistance, and he protected them time and time again. This is our God. Even when we choose to be all on a different path, we turn back to him, he's right there. Turn to Joshua 1. So God commissioned Joshua to lead the children of Israel, the next generation, into the promised land after 40 years of wandering. And in Joshua 1, verse 1, it says, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. So every place that the sole of your foot shall tread, I have given to you, just as I promised Moses. This promise hadn't changed, right? But it also says the land of the Hittites. This hadn't changed either. It didn't say that they had left yet. It was just their land. Go down to verse 10. And Joshua commanded the officers of the people, pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, prepare your provisions, for within 3 days you are to pass over this Jordan to go in and take possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving you to possess. And to the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the word that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God is providing you a place of rest and will give you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your livestock shall remain in the land that Moses gave you beyond the Jordan, but all the men of valor among you shall pass over armed before your brothers and help them until the Lord gives rest to your brothers as he has to you. And they also take possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving them. Then you shall return to the land of your possession and possess it, the land that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise. Okay, so Joshua commanded the people that he would pass over the Jordan and take possession of the land that the Lord gave them, right? Joshua was preparing the people to go in, but also told the men that they were to pass over armed. So it doesn't say anywhere that the big giant men that were there before are gone, you know? It doesn't say that the fortified cities were destroyed and decayed and everything's hunky-dory now, you know? It's just that here's the land for the taking. These things were still present. They still had opposition in front of them. But look at their response. In verse 16, and they answer Joshua, all that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your commandment and disobeys your words, whatever you commanded him shall be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. So look at the response of this people. All that you have commanded, we will do. And whatever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. You know, this is an obedient heart. This is a people who have confidence in the word of God and his provision in their lives. The heart is the difference here. It's a heart faithful to God. The circumstances in front of them hadn't changed. They were, you know, it's the same as 40 years before in that capacity of what was in front of them in the land, but the heart remained turned to God and believing his words and his promises and his faithfulness. And look what happened. Let's go to Joshua 3. We're almost done here. In Joshua 3, in verse 9, it says, and Joshua told the people of Israel, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, here is how you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Hivites and the Perizzites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Jebusites. Behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth is passing over before you into the Jordan. Now therefore take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each tribe a man, and when the soles of the feet of the priests bearing the ark of the Lord and the Lord of all the earth, and when the soles of the feet of the priests bearing the ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off from flowing, and the waters coming down from above shall stand in one heap. And this is what happened. Go to verse 17. Now the priests bearing the ark of the covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel was passing over dry ground until all the nation finished passing over the Jordan. You know, God provided instruction. Joshua relays the instruction to the people, and the people crossed the Jordan as the waters parted, like in the Red Sea. There's a beautiful summary in Joshua 4, verse 23 and 24. It says, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you to pass over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over all the, so that all the people of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. This people, this second generation, chose to believe the words of God and let him take care of them, despite what was going on around them. And they knew, even if they knew that they were going to confront something in their way moving forward, you know, they had seen God's provision daily in their life at this point. And when they were instructed to go into the promised land, although there were still challenges ahead for them to face, their response was, all that you've commanded us to do, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. What a beautiful testament to a heart turned to God, right? The children of Israel are such a great example to us. Like Kathy said the other day, when they remembered God and trusted in him, oh, how he cared for them. But when they didn't, how defeated they would be. And we can learn from this example, you know? Yes, things are going to get challenging. Yes, we'll have persecutions. Yeah, we're going to have tribulation. Yeah, there's going to be things that we're called to do that look really scary. But we can remember that we have a provision of God. We can remember the goodness of God. We can remember that he said to them, I am who I am, and called Israel his people, that he calls us his little children. And he promises to supply all our needs in our life, right? According to his riches. This mighty and powerful God is your God too. And he can do and will do all things just as mighty and just as powerful for you, for his children, when we keep our eyes on him. So when things are going on in life, when pressures are building up here, we have two choices: to stay fixated on the circumstances or to turn to God, to believe in his goodness, to believe in his provision, his power, his love, and his continual faithfulness to us.